All right, we're back, man. We're back for another episode of Eat, Pray, Judge, doing a Sunday edition, and it's been a great weekend. As always, you're hearing the voice of the one and only Gabe Pacheco, and I am joined by my trusty partner in crime.
Hi.
I mean, you can tell them your name.
They know it. How are you guys?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
So Sammy's here, and on mic three, we've got a special guest in studio today, the one, the only, Hazmeen Garza.
What up?
Thanks for joining us today, Hazmeen.
Thanks for having me.
And right before the show, we were, you know, you're like newer to New York City, mm-hmm. and we were just asking you where you're from, and Utah. You're our first performer who's been here visiting us from Utah.
That's shocking. That blows my mind.
Very few comedians make it to New York from Utah, I guess.
You mean the Hive?
The Hive.
Right. The Beehive State, baby.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right. Kill the bees.
Mm-hmm. On the swarm. That's why we're called the Beehive State.
I thought of it like the John Stockton State or...
exactly.
The Karl Malone Badlands.
Yeah.
I love that, Utah's basketball team is the Jazz.
Yeah.
Which,
They bought it from...
New Orleans. Where the name made sense.
Sure.
Yeah. Because when I think of Utah, the last thing I think of is jazz.
Yeah. Totally. Soulful saxophones.
Right. People of, you know, color.
Exactly.
You can say it. We're here.
People of...
Pox. We're talking about Utah pox. So here we are again. We're going to do a really special episode today. We're going to talk about a movie that came out in 1987, the film Dirty Dancing. And this is such a treat. Thank you, Hazmeen, for recommending it, because I, for one, had never seen this movie. It had fallen underneath my... It's a cultural blind spot for me.
Yeah.
And Sammy, had you seen this before?
No, I had not.
Wow.
This really blows my mind, because this movie, I'm serious. This movie was always on TV, you know, like you couldn't escape it.
Yeah.
It was always when everyone had TV, it was always on TV.
Sure. I'd be scrolling through channel surfing and I would hear, I'm having the time of my life. And then I would just change the channel right away, because I feel like that's the thing that I remember most about this is that if this was a meme, it would be that song. Having the time of my life.
And the lift, yeah.
And the lift.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was just what was always on. And I thought, is there an episode of G.I. Joe I can watch?
Yeah.
And I would just keep flipping stations.
Yeah, it's probably blowing your guys' mind that it blew my mind, right?
I feel like everyone I've talked to about this, it's like it's for most women that I've ever spoken to about Dirty Dancing. I mean, you've all seen it. Not to
you've all
bunch every woman together, but I can't. Think of a woman.
You people,
not
it's
seen
true.
Movie. You guys,
it's true. Yeah.
And well, I think somebody actually said this was the Star Wars for girls.
Very good, very good. Yeah. Description. And I like that.
Every young woman when this movie came out saw it, and I think, and then their mom saw it, and everybody, you know, it was a family thing. You bring everybody to this film.
Yeah.
And even Amber, she said it was always on TV, and that's why she couldn't believe I hadn't seen it before.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, 1987, I was watching films. I mean, that was a year I was alive. I was sentient. I think I saw Lethal Weapon, which we've already covered on this, that came out that year, and Aliens came out that year. So this was a big year for me watching films.
Three Men and a Baby.
I saw that in the theater.
Yeah,
oh man,
Ted Danson, Steve Guttenberg, Tom Selleck.
Remember the ghost? Remember the little boy? The little boy ghost.
In that film?
Yeah.
That's terrifying. I don't remember that. Was that like the abortion of Christmas past for them? Or why did they have a baby ghost in that movie?
I don't remember that ghost at all.
That just sounds like something that would haunt a house full of bachelors.
I mean, I haven't seen the movie in probably 30 years, but a ghost?
There's a scene in the house.
A where ghost?
They're walking through and there's just a little shaggy boy behind a curtain.
That's terrifying.
It is so creepy, dude.
Sure.
Really? Like an Easter egg.
Kinda, yeah, but it's like, seriously, what is this boy doing there, and how did no one know?
And they never...
Not even in editing or anything. How did this not get caught, you know?
I don't know.
Oh, you're
it's so creepy.
This isn't actually part of the movie's
narrative.
This is just... Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's like in the Disney movies, how the animators would just put one pornographic still.
Yes.
I mean, not that a child ghost is not pornographic, but... equally terrifying, jarring. It could be.
I mean, it's like when the cover of Little Mermaid. You remember when they had like the castle penis, in the background? Yeah. It was a dong, which is I think still on most copies.
Yeah,
or like in, you know. It wasn't whenever I would have looked at that last. But
right. I don't know if anybody actually buys Little Mermaid DVDs or VHSs anymore.
Probably not.
Just, it's all digital
not
downloads.
Not in America.
No. I remember the year that came out and everyone saying the castle's shaped like a penis. And I was like, so that's what a penis looks like. Like, I wouldn't have ever known by looking at the castle. And neither would penis. Any of, you know, other kids, most kids.
Sure. This was Utah Sex Ed. Yes. This is the cover of The Little Mermaid.
Jesus's penis.
So you saw this movie in 86? 87?
87, yeah. So I was 10 years old. My mom took me to the Dollar Theater. We waited till it hit the Dollar Theater. We got there a little late, and so they let us stay to see the beginning of it. All over again, and then we watched the movie all over again. So I watched it twice the very first time I ever watched it.
Well, that's a hardcore imprint.
That's how much I love it, dude. Yeah.
That's sweet, though, that your mom took you to that and that she had the patience to watch it twice. Did she love it as well?
Oh, yeah. We both loved it. Yeah.
Yeah.
My whole family loves that movie, dude. Yeah, because there's four girls out of six, and so we kind of dominate what we watch. So my family's seen that movie a million times.
Yeah.
And you know what? When I chose this movie and you guys told me to watch it again, I was like, I don't need to watch it again. I've seen it so many times. But I haven't watched the whole thing through 2019 eyes.
Right.
You know? And so that was like, oh, shit. This is like a progressive movie kind of, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a film changes every time you watch it, you know, depending on where you are in your life. So it's really cool. I love doing this with performers too, to hear like what their first impression was and how they felt about the film when they first saw it, and does it hold up, or like what do they focus, what do they think about now watching it again. So yeah, I'd love to hear like sort of the difference between what this movie meant in 87 to like an audience in 2019.
You want to get into that now, or do you want me to share my 1987 story?
I hear desperately.
Okay, so I was looking up like things that happened in 87 that were significant, and some new AIDS medication, some like major development with AIDS medication.
I think it was called AZT.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Yeah. So then I remembered that, you know, like millennials don't get this, but HIV and AIDS was like so freaking scary at the time. And my dad was so scared about it, so scared about AIDS. And like the littlest thing, I remember I got a dog that year, and I loved her so much, and I would let her like kiss my face and lick my face. And my dad would walk in and be like, are you trying to get AIDS? And that's what he would always say when he saw my little dog kissing me. Like any little thing, it was like, you're going to get AIDS.
Sure.
What are you, you know what I mean? And so when I read that, I was like, oh my God. I remembered how big of a thing AIDS was in my house and how many times we heard, are you trying to get AIDS? You know?
Yeah, well, it was super scary. People had no, well, you know, scientists knew how it spread, but I'd say the general population didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my godfather, he passed away from AIDS in like the early 80s, like 85, 86.
Around. Oh, really?
So this was the time where a lot of people were like, and growing up in D.C., that's a big city.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of my parents' friends who were gay around that time, that was like when the, I don't want to say first wave, but that like a lot of their friends were dropping off. And so, AIDS was, people don't know today, how big a deal that was.
Because
very few like illnesses affect you regardless of your class or race or
right exactly,
you know,
I like, feel yes. like
yeah,
the fact that it was sexually transmitted to scared yes. everybody,
yes,
you know,
like yeah,
they tried to pigeonhole who had it, gay men, you know, the black community, who are like minorities, and it was just this big absolute pandemic basically,
dude,
and everyone was afraid.
And imagine what it would have been like to grow up one generation earlier before AIDS, right after women had gotten the pill. And how fun sex was for like, there was like this window of like
20 years,
maybe. I don't even want to say 20. I'd say like 10 years where people were just like excited.
We
having
can fuck
sex.
Anyone. Like it wasn't even a thought.
And like, pop culture reflected that too. Like people, people were much more reckless in how they were having sex in movies. Mm-hmm. And the way that everyone was acting around each other, it wasn't like hardcore monogamy.
Right.
In the same way after the, like the, during the '80s, because of AIDS, that changed the way that even I'd say relationships were portrayed on television.
Yeah.
Cause it made everybody have to get like more like, you know, if you're sleeping around, you might be like a killer.
Yeah.
You know,
well, then people started getting it from other, like Arthur Ashe got it through a blood transfusion, passed away. There was that kid whose name I can't remember that Elton John wrote a song about who had it. Yeah. And then you get, you know, obviously as awareness becomes, you know, there's more awareness after a few years and you see high profile people get Freddie Mercury had it, died of it. And then magic, and magic's still ticking.
So he's still around.
People saw a relatable person, you know, not a rock star or a tennis legend who got it. In the worst way possible, I feel like, you know, just accidentally. But now it's, you know.
And Eazy-E got it.
That's true, Eazy-E got it.
Yeah.
But was he, yeah. How did
the way they painted him, though, he was like, he was a misogynist, womanizer. It's like, okay, sure.
Right.
Well, still a medical issue.
Like, I still think it's like the conspiracy I have is that maybe like someone working for a rival record label. Mm-hmm.
Suge.
Hey, I didn't.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's part of the East Coast, West Coast. Yeah. They're like, let's give him AIDS. Yeah. That's the way to handle this. That's funny.
I feel like that. I mean, that is a conspiracy theory out there on Reddit.
So I've never heard that. That's
by the way,
crazy.
Just googled Ghost Boy and Three Men and a Baby. Terrifying.
Yes. Yeah.
It wasn't a ghost boy. That kid looks like he was 15.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's so creepy. It's so when you're watching it, you it's chills. You're like, you know,
it's like Sixth Sense style. That's creepy. Sorry.
Yeah.
Ghost tween. So, Ghost tween. What do you have for 87? Anything?
Nothing about AIDS. Mr. T, if anyone remembers Mr. T, angered residents of Lake Forest, the community that he lived in, by cutting down more than 100 oak trees on his estate. Mr. T had an estate. The incident was called the Lake Forest Chainsaw Massacre. He was attempting to help his allergies.
Gabe, oh my god!
You can weigh in on this one since I think the guy's a monster. But I don't have allergies.
Well, you know,
how do you feel about
that? I think that's a very superstitious way to try to mitigate your allergies because pollen is airborne. You know, it's just out there. So it doesn't matter if he cuts down those trees if there's other trees on other people's property in the vicinity.
Right.
The wind is going to blow it his way no matter what. So I think that Mr.
That is correct.
You know, with all the gold chains, he should have been able to hire, like, the best allergy specialist to help him out.
Or he just sleep in a bubble.
Yeah.
Right.
Get some air purifiers. You'll be fine.
Where did he live?
I believe this is in Illinois, but I'm not 100%. Lake Forest.
Oh.
That's the most generic name ever of a, you know, some gated community.
Sure. Well, it's just two geographic features smashed together.
Right.
Lake Forest.
I mean, do you really see Mr. T being like super environmentally conscious?
I don't
you
think
know
anyone
what I mean?
In 1987
like,
was super environmentally conscious, but certainly not Mr. T.
Right.
Yeah, I think people were just like crumpling up plastic bags and tossing them directly into the ponds in 1987.
Right.
They should make him do some sort of environmental promotion now, even though nobody knows who he is. Like, I pity the fool who doesn't bring his own bag to a supermarket. Robert Downey Jr. buried the clothes that he wore in less than zero in the backyard of his house in an attempt to bury his decadent 1980s Brat Pack image and bring in a new phase of his life.
Oh,
he then made
God.
Chaplin and then was still doing drugs. Tried to, but now he's good, right? Tony Stark?
Yeah. I think in all the interviews now he's just drinking like wheatgrass shots.
Sure.
He's living a healthy life.
Super, a lot of energy.
I think things really worked out for Robert Downey Jr.
Because America loves a comeback story.
Mm-hmm.
He's a testament that you can do as many drugs as possible and still succeed, boys and girls. So don't believe the hype.
Yeah.
All right. 1987. Let's just hop right into this movie, man. Dirty Dancing. It stars Jennifer Grey.
How fucking cute is Jennifer Grey in this movie?
Pre-nose job.
That's what makes her cute.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
As somebody with a sizable snot box, I understand, but she is gorgeous.
The PNJ. You know what? I think that this makes her stand out. I think this makes her stand out.
She's very cute.
She's both white and ethnic at the same time.
She's Jewish. That's what white and ethnic is.
And that nose. The big nose is sexy.
How crazy that she fucked up her career after that nose job. She couldn't get work after that nose job.
You know why she got the nose job, right?
Why?
Ex-husband was stalking her. She tried to hide from him.
Me a break. That is the Mr. T excuse of why you're getting a nose
Mr.
job.
Mr. T doesn't make excuses. This is different.
I like that. Well, yeah, I heard that.
That's what she said.
The first one, she said she got her first nose job, and then I guess she was still recognizable, but then there were complications to that first nose job, and she ended up getting a second one, and that's the one where she, like, her friends couldn't recognize her anymore.
Yeah, she looked not great.
She looked...
Well, just like a different person.
No, if you had... A different person. Yeah. That's exactly what it was. She was unrecognizable. Like, if you had seen a picture of Jennifer Grey with the nose job, you'd think that was a beautiful woman, you know?
Yeah.
But she just didn't look like herself, and so...
Right.
Right.
Well, I'm sure she probably had problems getting cast, you know, outside of a Jewish sleepaway camp movie.
Well, so I loved her, without ever watching this film, my Jennifer Grey experience is that she was in Red Dawn, which came out in 1984, and that's one of my favorite action movies of all time.
Yep.
And it stars Patrick Swayze.
Yep.
Really?
Sheen,
oh, yeah.
And Jennifer Grey.
C. Thomas Howell?
Yeah. And,
I've never seen it.
Oh, it
what?
Is,
see, that's how... See,
yeah.
That's like the male version, the young 80s male version of...
And Leah Thompson's in it as well. So it's basically... These are not Brat Pack 80s people, but they are Brat Pack adjacent. And, well, I guess Charlie Sheen. So it's like all these young people. And the premise of Red Dawn is that it's a football team in Colorado. And Cuba, Nicaragua... and Russia invade the United States.
Okay.
So the first scene is all of these paratroopers dropping down into the high school machine gunning the high school principal and like just killing everyone. And the football team hops into their pickup truck and drives off into the mountains where they take two of these farmer has all of these guns because it's like a pro NRA film. And this farmer gives all of these young boys his guns and, like, a bunch of canned food. And he's like, take my daughters with you. And Jennifer Grey is one of the daughters.
Oh, God.
So these dudes become insurgent guerrillas hiding out in the mountains.
Oh, God.
Fighting against the totalitarian, police, a secret police and the military. So it's kind of like an inversion of Vietnam. Like, what if we had to be the Viet Cong?
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
And it's like the best teen film because it's like all like watching it as a little boy. You're like, oh, these are all like young. It's like young kids playing G.I. Joe.
Saving the world.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Now Red it's gone. Like we wouldn't need an invasion for that. The students shoot up the school, dude.
Right. Now invaders would be like, I don't know if we want to. No, they got crazy school shooters in the U.S. What do you call those? Like not sleeper cells, but just sort of like independent cells. Like they don't even need a central command. They're just gonna go out.
What movie came first, Ferris Bueller or Dirty Dancing?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off came out the year before this, I think, in 86. So that was the second one.
Okay.
Jennifer Grey has burned herself into like my pop culture reality with those two films, Red Dawn, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and now that I've seen Dirty Dancing, it's like. I mean, she's a classic.
She is. Of the 80s movies, she is. Those
I forgot
three.
That she was in Ferris Bueller.
Oh, her role in Ferris Bueller is so good.
And Charlie Sheen is in that film as well.
Yeah,
that's true.
They have that scene together at the end in the police station.
I love it.
It's the best scene ever.
So here's a side note about her personal life. She was dating Matthew Broderick low-key during Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, really?
But they were keeping it secret, and then Matthew Broderick and her were in a car together, I believe in Ireland, and Matthew Broderick veered into oncoming traffic and had a car accident where he killed a mother and daughter.
He was with Jennifer Grey? I knew about that.
Yeah. And she had whiplash. Her back was like all messed up from this. She had to get surgery for it. But I think when Dirty Dancing came out, she had already filmed Dirty Dancing. And so she was like a hit. But she was not really part of the PR campaign afterwards because she felt like she had a survivor's guilt and also was injured.
Yes.
And how fucking crazy is it? Matthew Broderick has sort of like skated through life after this, having murdered two people in a vehicular homicide.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, he was charged with manslaughter.
Yeah, I think he had to pay $175.
It was some ridiculously cheap fine or something crazy.
So he's just walking through life with these two ghosts following.
Yeah, there's a comic with a really good joke about it. I think it's Andrew Durso.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's yeah, somehow he's been able to keep this squeaky clean public image, but he's yeah, he's got some sins to atone for.
But I mean,
yeah,
it's not he was, you know, a murderer. He just
it was an accident.
A driving accident.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
But I mean, you know, I'm sure it sucks to have to live with that.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we should ask him.
We'll
have him on. We'll do a Ferris Bueller's Day Off and have Matthew Broderick on.
We'll have him phone in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He lives in New York.
So she plays, Jennifer Grey plays 17 in this movie, and she's 27.
Mm-hmm. She looks great.
Damn.
Can you believe it?
Holy shit.
She looked so young.
Wow.
Yeah.
You gotta love those Mediterranean jeans.
Yeah, fresh face.
Don't crack.
Back then, there were so many cases of that. So many cases of, like, you know, late 20s playing the teenager in the high school movie or whatever.
The daughter, in 1987, the daughter of Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon was 27 playing a 17-year-old.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Patrick Swayze's playing 25 in this film.
He's
but
48.
Yo, yeah, man.
How old is he in the movie?
He's in real life, he's 34. But he's 25.
Was he? 25. Yeah. Okay, dude, that was an issue that I had with the movie, okay? That I didn't know when I was watching it originally.
Yeah.
But now I was like, this 17-year-old is hooking up with a 25-year-old? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge problem. Not just that, but I love how the dad at the end was like, oh, you're a good dancer? Okay, then you can fuck my daughter. That's okay, you know? Like, that's
okay, yeah, he was like, so you didn't pull, you pulled out when you fucked the other person. By all means.
Yeah.
Take my 17-year-old daughter.
Exactly.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, this is pre-AIDS, you know? You don't. It's not like you had to wrap it up. You just have to, it's all pull-out game. Rhythm method. And he's 25 in this. And I think that was much more acceptable back then.
Yeah.
To be like, I remember talking to this old lady who was my art teacher, and she was like 80 years old when she was my art teacher, and this was like in the 80s, so a long time ago. And she said her older brothers, to play a prank on her, when she turned like 15 or 14, they went around town and they told everybody our sister's courting age. And like old dudes would just show up with like flowers and like knock on the door.
Gross.
And that's just like, that was just the mentality, I think, of, I'm not saying this was okay, but just the mentality of like, well, age didn't matter maybe as much as it does now. Like, I look at these stars, like Elvis, he married like a 15-year-old.
I was going to say, yeah.
And the world was like, okay with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No one was like, dude, you're a pedophile.
Where, like, rock stars were marrying like toddlers, basically. You know, great balls of Jerry Lee Lewis, Chuck Berry.
Yep.
Yeah,
R. Kelly was just born in the wrong era. Okay, that's all we're trying to say
that
here.
That guy would
be
killing it in the '40s and fifties. You'd be a celebrated hero, not a sex monster.
Totally, everyone would have completely whitewashed that narrative.
I mean, they kind of did for several years.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
3 years ago, and
like, okay, we have two tapes. Oh, okay, we got to do something.
Peeing again.
Yeah. He's saying her age on the tape.
She's holding her license.
Yeah.
Up.
She's her backpack's still on.
Braces. She's like,
yeah. She's wearing Velcro sneakers. Oh man. What a treat. So, if you haven't seen Dirty Dancing, a brief synopsis of the film is that it is the summer of 1963, a time of innocence before JFK has been assassinated. Before Vietnam is totally heated up, before the youth culture has exploded,
right.
And we've got this very professional Jewish family made up of a doctor and I don't know what the, I think the wife is, she's an educator, but anyway, they're taking their family with two daughters up to Camp Kellerman, which is
Kellerman's,
mm-hmm.
which is like a Jewish cruise ship resort. In the middle of the Catskills. It's a camp. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of fun activities to be had up there. And Baby is played by Jennifer Grey. And this is kind of like the end of her innocence story, you know, where she dances to rock and roll for the first time and falls in love for the first time with Johnny Castle.
What was her actual real name? Did they cover? Was it like
Frances?
Esther?
Oh, Frances.
Okay. Frances Houseman.
I can see why.
Yeah. Baby.
She changed it to baby.
You know what I'm just noticing too? How many times you said Jewish?
Yes.
So I grew up in Utah. I didn't know any Jewish people. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that this family was Jewish or that these people were Jewish, you know?
Right.
No idea. I thought they were just white rich people. That's period, you know?
Yeah. No, I...
Because they never say Jewish in the movie either.
Uh-huh.
You know?
It's just, it's, I think it's implied.
It's East Coast implied.
The names.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're very...
Yeah.
You know it if you live on the East Coast.
Right.
Yes.
This is a very... But... I think that this movie had mass appeal, mm-hmm. and part of it is that that you don't notice.
Right.
You know, mm. that, I mean, middle America can watch this and be like, oh, these are white people.
And they got Swayze, who's like an Aryan angel.
Well, he's an Irish guy. In the script, he was supposed to be Italian. And that is adding something, too, as well, where sort of dating outside of... This was like the first generation of Jewish people to be white.
Yeah, these were like, they're still ethnic whites, but...
Yeah.
Kind of, they're, you know.
Like, this is their, but they had their own camps, their own summer camps.
They had their own camps, you guys. I mean, yeah. Why is everyone talking shit about those camps?
You could work, you could sleep.
Yeah. But this is also the Borscht Belt. That's what this Borscht Belt comedy, one of the early pillars of stand-up comedy, you actually see it here with that character Newman. And
his name is not Newman.
His name isn't Newman, but you know him as Newman from Seinfeld.
Whitney Houston's. His name is not Newman.
But he's the comedian who's at the camp, and like one way that all these comedians in the 50s and 60s were making their money was doing the Borscht Belt, which was these camps in the Catskills.
Yeah.
And so that whole like the Jewish stand-up tradition comes out of this this environment.
That's why they touched on it in the Mrs. Maisel show.
Yeah.
They do a whole season where they're basically up at one of these camps.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was their, instead of doing college and corporate,
right.
They do these camps all summer long.
Right.
For 3-week stints.
Yeah.
Which is how long they're up there.
So apparently now there's like 3 or 4 Jewish summer camp movies made. Wet Hot American Summer, which was outside of North Bethesda Chevy Chase. That was a Jewish summer camp, which they kind of like alluded to in the very, very beginning, but they never really went back to it. But that's a funny movie. And then this, Maisel, a couple others.
Sure. Well, you got a lot of successful people that come out of this who go on to write scripts in Hollywood. And you see in this movie, you have this class distinction, too, where all of the young, that's a very interesting part of this that holds up for today.
Yes.
Which is the class conflicts. You've got the waiters versus the entertainment staff. Mm-hmm. And the waiters are all the very nice young Jewish boys.
Ivy leaguers. Right.
They're going to Yale. They're going to Harvard.
That's what's important.
They're going to the Cornell School of Hotel Management.
That's a real thing.
My friend graduated from there.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's where Neil is going. And this is a matchmaker thing too, where they're just trying to hook up the young ladies from who are the guests with these young guys who are on a career track.
Yes.
Yeah. They're just interning here for the summer.
Right.
Serving these girls.
Yeah.
And hopefully hooking up with
them. That's why I think it's a great movie. There's some messages in this movie, you know? The class thing, the abortion thing, huge.
We're going to talk about that.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's get to that later. But the scene where, I guess for me it was most magnified when I'm a 10-year-old watching this, is the scene where Robbie says, "Oh, it's okay, Penny. I went slumming too." When she sees him with, that's when I was like,
"Right,
it was very clear that this is about rich people versus working class or whatever,
exploiting the people."
Right.
Yeah.
I wrote down this would be The Help if it was only made with white people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it is, and it's Neil is a Robbie. Then there's Robbie's the other sort of asshole waiter who's trying to date Baby's sister, and he's reading Ayn Rand.
That's so great.
I think everybody should read a little Ayn Rand just to see. She writes like the devil. It's basically like writing heroes with no compassion or like moral code. And what's interesting is that so many Republicans love Ayn Rand and people in Silicon Valley, and they hold this writer up as like this sort of, her books are the Bible, and they've made the world terrible.
Yeah. That was another message in the movie. Yeah. I mean, the fact that he wanted her to read this book, and they show a shot of the book, and he's like, I've got notes in the margins, or whatever, you know? Yeah. I mean, that was saying a lot about who this personality is.
It's like, yeah, that is the craziest thing to give to anyone else.
Yeah.
And have them think that you're an okay person. Like, that's what, like, American Psycho would read, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like Patrick Bateman would read Ayn Rand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of, like... Ayn Rand's books, her protagonist just straight up rape people as like,
right,
as part of the plot, and they, right, and they're held up as the heroes of the books.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's and by the way, Paul Ryan, the politician, loves Ayn Rand.
Yes, so. I know. You know, something else I was noticing while watching this is there were a lot of dance movies in the 80s.
Yes,
and Cynthia Rhodes was in a lot of them. The girl who plays Penny.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah?
She was in...
She's a limber lady with spaghetti limbs.
Shit.
Seriously, I loved the entire time she talked, shit. I was like, how are you alive?
With her leg.
Yes.
All the way up, touching her ear. I mean, just in one slick motion, you know?
One man can do that. Jean-Claude Van Damme does right. that in every movie, those splits.
I wonder if Swayze could pull it off. I feel like he could.
I feel like he could, too.
You think she's so limber, though. I was...
Well, she's literally... She weighs, like, 74 pounds.
She's so goddamn skinny.
It's crazy.
So skinny.
Scary skinny.
Yeah.
But she was in...
Intimidating.
Yeah.
She was in Flashdance.
Okay.
Do you remember the friend who, like, goes to... She starts stripping and... They have to pull her out of the club. It's so shameful or whatever. She was in Flashdance. She was in Staying Alive. And then she was in some... music videos, and she married Richard Marx. He sang one of the songs from one of the movies that she was in, and she was with him for like 25 years.
You've made a connection for me. So we covered the movie Staying Alive here on this podcast, and now I know who Penny is because you brought up Richard Marx.
Oh, really?
Because I was researching the dancers from Staying Alive. And I was like, oh, one of them married Richard Marx? Okay.
Yeah.
So it's Penny.
Wait, yes. Who was she in the movie? Because I remember covering the movie. I don't remember her. Ah, she was probably just one of them.
She was like a fling of his.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Hmm.
She may have been the main lady.
No.
Well, you know what?
No.
People can look it up.
Yeah.
I don't want to argue about a movie that we're not researching for this. But I do know that you're right. Penny was in Staying Alive. And, other dance movies from this time. Well, we also saw Saturday Night Fever for this podcast. So this is our third dance movie.
Damn, yeah.
Fourth.
Yeah, see, it was a big
Step
theme.
Up. We did Step Up.
That is true.
Yeah.
That was a good one, too.
I thought that was just about race relations, not so much dancing. I'm just kidding. It was about fucking dancing in a bad movie.
All right. So, you have anything else you want to say about Penny? I like her. She got kicked out of her house when she was 16. Very different from the guests here.
Mm-hmm.
It's always awkward to ask, employees about their personal lives when you're at a luxury resort.
Yeah. She didn't ask about her personal life. She offered it, dude. She was basically saying, here's why I'm a bitch.
She's a sharer.
Baby. Yeah, exactly. Baby. Yeah. Is that what they call you? You don't know shit about my problems, baby. There's so many lines from
I'm
this
pregnant. And I'm poor. Those are my problems.
Yeah. And she was a Rockette. A former Rockette.
Rockette.
So what happened?
Yeah.
Something happened where she got fired from the Rockettes. Sad.
She aged out, dude.
right. Well, yeah. Sorry. You were 18. You gotta go.
Another thing I was thinking about with this movie is, because the very first scene they're showing, shots of the dancers. I don't know if you noticed while they're rolling the credits, it's like in black and white and they're showing the dancers. And I remember the first dancer they show, I remember, when I was watching it, noticing her because she looks Latina. And I was like, oh, she's my favorite. She's my favorite. And like my dad used to always make us watch the movies until the very end to watch the credits to see if there were any Latino names. And it was always like, look, the key grip. The key grip is Latino, you know? But this girl, I don't remember what her name was, but she was. She had a Latino last name at least, you know? And so that made me think of representation and how very early on you're looking for it, but maybe don't realize it, you know?
Yeah.
So I was looking, who most looks like me? Who? Oh, that chick way, way in the back, you know?
100%. Well, same year as this, I remember seeing Aliens with my dad. And and this was actually heartbreaking when I had to break it to him. But in Aliens, Vasquez is the lady space marine. And she's like the biggest badass on the team. And she's got a huge, huge pulse rifle, like cannon that she carries around. But she's actually an actress in Brownface.
Oh shit! Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, my
so
God.
Vasquez is not, but she's a brilliant character actress. Like she is a chameleon. Yeah. However,
she really pulls off that brown face. Is
she
what you're saying?
Right. She pulled it off well enough for my dad to be like, "Hey, mijo, yo, she's a badass. Look at her, our people." And I was, but like, yeah, she's like just like a British actress who lives in L.A.
Mm.
And anyway, so that's a case of James Cameron with problematic brown face in his films.
At least you guys got to keep your names. To find like Arab actors back in the day, you'd be like, how would you know? And then you'd find out that there were like Danny Thomas, Dick Dale, all these guys. Just like, what the, like, how would I ever know?
Well, not Richie Valens.
No. We covered La Bamba.
Yep.
That's right. We covered La Bamba with Melissa Rocha.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was a fun one. But yeah, representation matters in this film. There are a couple black people in this, but they are basically extras. They don't have any speaking roles.
Absolutely.
A couple. I only saw the one the scat singer right?
Right, the band leader.
Right, the band leader.
Among the help dancers, uh-huh, when they pan across them, you uh-huh see there's like a black couple.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That was it.
I mean, that's for the times and where they were. That's not surprising. I don't feel like that was...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
There was a strain. You see, though, Baby comes from a more progressive, branch of this community. Because when she's driving up there, this is before John F. Kennedy was assassinated, but she wants to go join the Peace Corps, mm-hmm, which was a big thing that he was promoting, and she wants to go work in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. So there's still this like idealism with her that that Americans can change the world for the better.
Right.
And she also is impressed with Neil during the dance when Neil says that after he graduates, he wants to go work with the Freedom Riders.
Mm-hmm.
And those were... you know, they're seen as white Americans that went down south to help, with desegregation. But a majority of them were, Jewish Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. You see this link where there's this sense of, like, this community wants to do mm-hmm progressive things.
Yeah.
Right.
That was the only thing she liked about Neil. So
right. Right.
She couldn't stand him.
Which I understand.
Oh, God. He was so, like, smarmy and just proud of himself.
Well, he's like, and he's telling jokes about to her when he's trying to pick her up about how other women love him because he's poached other women from their boyfriends because he has hotels.
Mm-hmm. What does he have that I don't have? Two hotels. Oh, God.
Yeah. Neil.
Right.
I was actually uncomfortable because I've never seen this before and I'm watching it through 2019 eyes. I was uncomfortable every time that Baby and Neil were by themselves because I was thinking, oh, man, am I about to watch a dramatic, attempted sexual assault?
Yeah.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I just was thinking, like, that was always in my head, that we're about to have, like, some uncomfortable, like, almost rape moment.
Yeah. Well, that was the guy who I was very aware there was an age difference. I mean, he has a receding hairline and everything. I was like, why are you letting this man go dance with your woman, with your daughter? What is happening? You know?
Two hotels.
Oh, God. Exactly. back to the scene where he gives her the book.
Yeah.
I noticed... now watching it, that she's supposed to be this timid, like shy, awkward girl, but she pulled the rich girl card really quick with him when she dumps the water in his lap and says, "Stay away from me, stay away from my family, or I'll have you fired."
Yeah, she's Baby is strong. She is a strong protagonist in this film, and she always comes off as cute and innocent right off the bat, but there's a line you can't really cross with her,
mm-hmm,
and that's like a scene you bring up right there where she does that. Other things she does that are ballsy are like going to, you know, yeah, she is asking daddy for money to solve a problem, but she's still asking for like $250 in 1963, which has got to be, it's like $2,000 now.
Yeah. Okay, well, I was thinking, how much...
What's the going rate for Gentile abortions in 2019?
So someone had... Okay, yeah, someone had a joke the other day about how much an abortion costs. I was like, damn, it's way more than when I was at... my friends were having abortions, right. You know? Which I remember it was $300.
Sure.
Or maybe it was $400. I don't remember. But someone mentioned how much it was the other day, and I was like, what? It's like $700 or something.
Wow. So
that's what you get with a Republican in office.
$700 abortions.
Yeah.
Sure.
Also, we all know that baby marries a Jewish doctor eventually, right?
For sure.
Okay.
For sure.
I just want to make sure that that's clear. All this, like, do-gooder bullshit. Like, yeah. The end of the day, she's settling down with a made man.
But her heart is in the right place.
That's great.
She's able to take stands where other people don't take any stands.
Right.
You know, she doesn't just go with the flow the whole time.
I love that the sister Lisa is just the biggest idiot, dude.
Yeah, she's like the stereotype.
Yes. You know? Yes.
I wrote down that Lisa is a tremendous actress. I laughed every time she was on screen.
Yeah, me too.
And there's something where to dance badly, you have to be a good actress.
Yeah.
Or an actor. You just have to be a good actor to actually look corny on screen. Because she's willing to go there. Mm-hmm. She's willing to just make herself be the butt of the joke.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that whole Hawaiian song and dance.
That was just perfect.
I can't believe it. I looked up at one point. I was like, this is still happening? It was like 7 minutes long.
And everyone's acting normal. Like she's painting the palm tree. They're playing poker.
At one point, it was like staring out of my window. And then I looked back and I was like, gee, really? And she's still sitting there like in pain, like monotone.
Oh, man. And her parents are watching her perform. And I'm thinking, I feel so bad for them watching her. And then it made me think, do I want to be a parent and have to go through that embarrassing thing of having to watch my child do something like embarrassing on stage? And then I thought, man, God bless my parents for watching me just be an extra in plays and perform poorly.
Have they watched your stand-up?
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, my parents told me the other day they will never watch my stand-up. And now after watching Dirty Dancing, I'm like, oh my God, is that why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I also feel like with a daughter, it might be, like a woman, it might be different. Like if you cover sexual content, like you're, as a dad, I feel like you'd never want to hear anything.
That's exactly what my mom said.
I saw your butt thing the other night.
Yeah. Oh, that's not. I have way worse.
No, I'm sure you do, but that would even be uncomfortable for him, I would imagine, or your mom.
So I went to. I did a stand-up show last night at the Brooklyn House of Comedy, and immediately after our show was a poetry night, but it was all sex poems, and it was all older women, like you know, not a lot of millennials, older women all telling graphic sex poems.
I love that.
It was amazing. It was great to watch. And we stayed late because this comedian Julio Diaz, we didn't have time to put him on the first show. And so they were gracious enough to give him a spot halfway through.
In the sex poems?
Hell yeah.
What?
So we all stuck around to watch this. And honestly,
I
envy Julio so much for this opportunity because he's got a better story to tell than we do. Yes. Just doing a straight cookie cutter stand-up show.
Yes.
And before he went up, it was a burlesque dancer, and she did a whole scene to Sade, one of my favorite singer. So she's doing sexy stuff to Sade. It's delicious. And then we got a cipher with five women telling erotic poems, and they're mostly mostly lesbian poems. And then one guy gets up, and he's wearing a suit like Creflo Dollar. He looks like a reverend. And he's going up there just talking about just eating pussy. And it's great. Everyone loves it. And he's like touching ladies in the front row. They're swooning. I've never seen anything like this before. It was magical.
This sounds awesome.
Yes. But then a woman goes up and she tells her graphic sex story. And then and she's like, and my mom's here. And her mom's like, preach. And man, that blew me away.
Oh, man.
That somebody would get. But her mom was also dressed up in leather. So I think later in the evening she was going to go up and perform too.
Right.
You know,
multi-generational
erotic poetry.
Right. You know, the thing that you were saying about the older women telling the poems, I wish there were more scenes in movies of old people fucking.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about how they'll have the age difference with the 40-year-old actor and the 22-year-old. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about old people. Mm-hmm. I think we need to see that, you know?
Sure. Well, hopefully now with, like, the Blue Chew. this movie brought to you by Blue Chew, which is like that.
What's
new,
Blue Chew, Gabe?
It's like the male direct order of Viagra. It's like generic Viagra.
Oh.
So, but I'm sure, like, we just need to go to these, like, performance pharmaceutical companies and be like, will you sponsor a movie about old people having sex?
Right.
Because that's the lane.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're
like
right.
It.
I want to
like
watch
it.
old.
Yeah, there is no porn with, like, 60-year-old couples going at it.
Yeah, it's always an older woman and a younger guy, or an older guy and a younger woman, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's never just, like, same age.
Right.
Yeah, so like like AARP porn.
Like we listen to the same music crowd.
Right.
We grew up on the same shows.
Yeah. Like all of us here right now.
And, all right, so what I loved, look, we'll get into some scenes. I really liked the first scene where Baby goes to the helps, to the entertainment.
It's the best.
Cabin.
It's the best.
And it was the first time that it dawned on me that 1950s and early 60s rock and roll was like sex music.
Yeah.
Like, sure, I remember teachers and old people telling me, like, no, when they're talking about the mashed potato, they're talking about fucking.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, it was just corny to call it the mashed potato.
Oh, is that what it meant? I still don't.
And then when you watch them.
They're grinding. They're grinding.
Oh,
right. Yeah. Dude, yeah. Imagine that time, the pristine, like, la, 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 and how women were, like, supposed to be at that time. When you see that, my mom was, that's why my mom loved the movie.
Sure.
She was like, yes, this perfectly shows what rock and roll meant and how, like, rebellious this kind of dancing was. And,
hip gyration.
You know,
Yeah. And you, but totally, thinking about what came before it, everything before it was just like dreamy music where people are like talking about the moon or whatever, and there's like violins and shit.
Yes,
and this was
this
had that, this was pre, I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, these were the 1963 version of ravers, you know, or like twerkers. Because they're
twerkers,
in this, it's a smoky room, there's like purple lighting. Everyone's having fun, you know. This was them at the at the club. This was them voguing
for sure.
I remember at one point, I was like, "Oh, so people actually like dancing sober?" That's what I took out of that scene. I was like, that's how that works. That was through a different guise than you guys were looking at it.
I love they're sweaty in there. It's away from everyone else. It's their private little thing. She's breaking the rules by even being there.
Right. He doesn't like it that she's there.
Yeah.
This is why Elvis was the biggest sex symbol for decades, because he was the first person to really get on stage and mimic sexual hip
movements. The way black people dance.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're and then so this scene also so titillating. If I had seen this as a tween, this would have affected me, I'm sure. But but when Swayze and Gray,
yes, yes.
And he's teaching her how to dance, and they're just making a hard eye contact and thrusting.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
Are you talking about the crawling scene?
This is the same scene. This is them with the mashed potato.
Right.
This is them twerking. It's her first time coming into the help cabin.
When she's super awkward and she's just like stiff and he's like, okay, look at me. Now move your hips. Now do that, you know, and she's just kind of doing it. That was very like.
God, he took dancing so serious.
Intense,
yeah. He yelled, what are you doing? Are you trying to kill me? It's like, no, man, you guys are just dancing.
Yeah, exactly.
I know.
But that scene when he just walks away and she's just sitting there in this like state.
Still squirming.
Yes.
And she keeps squirming. And this is also great acting that when the song stops, she's still like squirming to the beat, like, and she's all goofy, complete, like it's all hormones at
smitten.
This point. Yeah,
yeah,
she is smitten.
Yeah.
She plays smitten so well.
She does
the face for smitten.
She just, well, then she lost that nose, so she didn't have the face for it anymore.
Yeah, man. And then another great scene for me was after. After she decides that she's got to do this merengue competition as a substitute for Penny, she goes, we've got her...
When she's practicing.
Solo dancing at first to Wipeout, the montage.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was just
You're adorable. Picking all the classic scenes, all the scenes that this movie is known for.
I am a basic bitch.
No. I'm saying you picked the standouts, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that's so good.
That's been recreated so many times.
Has it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to recreate it now for my Instagram feed.
She nice goes up the stand. Yeah, that would be so awesome.
I'm just going to call Gabe White Claw.
Yeah,
my mom was laughing so hard. I remember in the theater, my mom just laughing, just being like, oh my God, she's discovering her sexiness, you know?
Yeah.
Her sexuality.
Yeah, she's getting her groove.
Yeah.
Not even getting it back.
Just getting it.
You know what was a major thing back then too? And I remember everyone in the audience going, oh, when she goes to his room, when they fuck for the first time, she goes to his room and she slides her hand over his ass.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That was a big thing for the woman to do so. He was the sex symbol.
That's right.
You know?
The object. He was just
He was the object. Yeah. Yes.
That was like a part of his his character arc that he hated. You know, the fact that he was constantly used. I don't feel bad for sexually used men, by the way. I don't know why. I just don't. Like, on an emotional level. Like, suck it up. Suck it up, chief.
Yeah.
You're 25 and all they want you for is sex. You'll get over it.
Yeah, enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, exactly.
What was it? He was being used. He was a male gigolo.
Definitely.
With the,
I'm not saying he wasn't.
The bungalow bunny.
Bungalow bunny, baby. Yeah, that woman does a good job, too.
She does. And she actually doesn't look that old.
She looks great. The one who's dating the bald gambler.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. Robbie got it. I mean, you know, Johnny didn't want it, so Robbie swept in there.
Poached.
Yeah.
I did like they made Robbie the scummiest character in the film by far.
Me too.
That was good.
I love when they finally fight. I love that all the working class people, all the entertainment staff, they just stop. And some of them, did you notice that one of the girls crouches down like this to get a better view, you know? And they just watch the fight and then they just go on with their lives. Like, yeah, this is how we settle things. Okay, you know, it's done.
Yeah.
It was tough to watch Swayze not rip his throat out since we just got Roadhouse. He was a genteel fighter in this one.
Swayze has
almost
been
dancey.
In every, we've covered, since we started this podcast, I think Tom Cruise has been covered a ton. Mm-hmm. And Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
I didn't know that he was going to be such a
repeat
subject for mm-hmm. us. Because we did Point Break
mm-hmm. two weeks ago. Yeah.
We did Roadhouse. Hopefully one day soon we'll do Red Dawn. Great too. But I think this is our third Swayze
film. We just kind of did Red Dawn.
You know what I was thinking when you guys said you'd never seen Dirty Dancing? When I was married, I remember my husband was in the next room. And I was flipping through the channels, and Bloodsport was on.
Yeah.
And I saw, and it wasn't even, there was like one or two words that were said. And I was like, oh shit, hurry and change it. Because if he sees this, he's going to watch it. And he, in the other room, he's like, is that Bloodsport?
Yeah.
Is that Bloodsport? And he comes running. I was like, shit.
What like
and
a dog was, whistle.
Yeah. He couldn't, yes, exactly.
Okay, USA. And he's like, huh?
Yeah.
Just starts walking.
It was like if I had heard some line in the other room going, baby, is that your name? Well, I would have been like, what? Yeah. Dirty, you know?
Yeah.
But I've still have never seen Bloodsport. And so that's the equivalent probably.
I feel like we should have you back on and do Bloodsport. Like one for us, one for you, one for you.
I would love to do that. Oh, my God. Yeah. Let's
bring you into our world.
Let's do it. Yeah. You guys are like, oh, God.
What,
I was like, Jesus, they're still dancing? This is a different scene. This movie seemed like one full fucking dance-off.
Well, I've been watching a lot of YouTube dance videos lately, so I was like, I don't really work out, so.
So you watch people dance?
Yeah, so I watch people
I do the
dance,
same thing.
And it feels like a workout.
I love it. Yes. Watching Penny in that first scene when she goes up to the cabin, how many times she does that kick?
Yeah.
I was like sweating watching her. I'm like, damn, girl. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the abortion now?
I'd love to.
Okay. Yeah. Props to my mom for letting me see that movie and knowing what it was about and then letting me see it all over again. I grew up in a household where we knew abortions weren't a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know? And that was very rare at that time in 1987 living in Utah. Like my friends, they weren't allowed to see that movie. Hell no. You know? They grew up with the opposite.
And I'm wondering, so a lot of the country, even though abortion's legal, it's very difficult to obtain one. Is Utah a place where, do you have to drive out of Utah?
No. So when I got to, when I was telling you when my friends were getting abortions, this was like early 2000s, 2000, 2001. And who was the president that, Bush, W was. And no, you could just go to Planned Parenthood and.
Okay.
Lay down $350.
And that's in, this was like Salt Lake City.
A suburb of Salt Lake, yeah. West Valley City.
Sure, sure, sure. But it's so, it's such an expanse of land out there that it's access to it. Do you have to like get to a big city?
Like, No. It's you're thinking it's like this rural, like I lived on a farm or something. And
well, I know. I mean, I've been to Salt Lake, but I've like also driven around Utah and it's some pretty vast expanses.
Yeah. When you get really out of it, but yeah. I was still in the total like suburban, you know, drove like five minutes, 10 minutes, you know, yeah. Like
you take a bus, take a cab. It's fine. It's no big deal. You could skateboard there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with this abortion, your parents were like, this was a teachable moment to watch this movie.
No, it wasn't even a teachable because I had already known at that age. Isn't that, that's what I was thinking. I already knew abortions weren't a bad thing. We didn't even really discuss it, but I did know enough where I was like, oh, they're addressing this in a movie. I've never seen this.
Yeah.
This is a big deal, you know?
So this was a big deal because Clearasil was one of the sponsors for this movie. They wanted this to be like a teen film. They wanted, Clearasil was like, oh, our market is teens and we want to give money to this. And then they read the script and they were like, abortions, you take that out? And they refused to take it out.
It was such a huge part of the storyline.
Right.
It was the whole storyline, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's immediately introduced. It's the whole reason she has to dance for, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's also like how corporations work too. They're like, oh, we love your idea. The story about Batman, it's really great. Do you think that you could have it be with where he doesn't wear a cape and we don't call him Batman?
Yeah. Like instead of an abortion, could she just have really bad cramps? Could you do that?
Right. Maybe the title Dirty Dancing was like a reference to abortions and dancing, like the dirtier part that they had to cover. Or, you know, it was considered to be taboo and dirty.
Yeah.
And then dancing. Because that's literally the only two things that I think about when I think about this movie.
Or they were telling you, if you dirty dance, you're going to get pregnant. She got pregnant dirty dancing. That's how she got pregnant.
She got pregnant during the first the mashed potato.
Yeah. Over the clothes stuff. Over the clothes pregnancy.
And then abortions were hard to get back then. And this guy, there's like a wandering itinerant abortion doctor who is using a dirty knife.
A dirty knife. They're like,
he showed up with a dirty knife.
And a folding table. Yeah. I mean, come on. He's like, in the door. I'm right. Where is she?
Right. Like, you think he could.
That was very good.
It still has meat on it. She's like, they're like, at least clean it.
Like, he's not going to get a good Yelp review from this one. Like, how many of these botched abortions can you perform?
And you were okay? You were like, okay, yeah, do the abortion. You know?
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, I'll take care of it myself, doc.
Totally. We also have, one group of people who I loved in this movie that didn't get enough airplay. And the side plot of the Schumacher kleptomaniacs. How fucking cool were they? It's like that old couple who end up being the real villains in this film. The pickpockets who go from camp to camp to camp, robbing all of the other people who are there.
What a great like throwback, kind of like a just surprise, you know? You were like, oh shit.
That was a very like Drifters. Almost like Scooby-Doo. Like they would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for these pesky kids. And yeah, these flim-flam men. Mm-hmm. You know, and they were traveling from Arizona, where they'd been picking pockets, to the Catskills.
Mm-hmm. Made so a fortune here this summer.
Oh, yeah. They made a fortune. This was their Point Break.
Yeah.
You know, during the summer, they run off and they rob all of these old Jewish people, and then I guess they winter somewhere.
Right.
Nice Florida.
And then you're thinking back to the scenes that they were in, and they were pickpocketing, because he's right there at the poker table, remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Watching. Wow. Yeah. Actually, yeah, I need to see this movie maybe twice.
Look out for the Schumachers and everything. They're behind the curtain, like the boy in the Three Men and a Baby.
Ghost Boy.
They're in other 80s movies, pickpocketing people.
They're just on sets. They're like really legit pickpockets.
Those people couldn't pickpocket, dude. They could barely even walk, you know? Like, I don't know.
I wonder if they were feigning how old and doddery they were. If they were, that was part of scam.
You're right.
Was that they're like,
I would have gotten scammed for sure.
Or maybe the stealing just kept them alive.
Yeah.
Like a defibrillator.
It's the rush.
That was their calcium.
Yeah, I don't need to take Centrum Silvers.
Right.
Just pick these pockets, baby. Well, do we have any scenes that stuck out for you?
I think you kind of covered the ones that stuck in my head.
The one that I watched differently this time was the very last scene. I was like, oh, this is a cheesy movie. It took me that long to realize that it was a cheesy movie, you know, until I'm 42 years old.
Sure.
But, I mean, come on. He goes on stage and goes, guys, I usually do the last dance of the summer, and this time I'm going to do the kind of dancing that I wanted, or whatever he says, the big speech. And that the guy just lets him. He's just like, oh, okay, yeah, what does he have to say, you know?
Right.
Just kind of steps to the side, and then it's all choreographed, and they're all doing the same thing at the same time. And yeah.
There's a couple like cliches, I think, that jump out to me when it comes to like late 70s, early 80s films. One of them is if you watch like old comedies, they all end with like an anarchy where there's like a massive car crash.
Yes.
Or there's like the house explodes.
Yes.
Or something like that. Like there's just every pandemonium and that's the ending. And then, or it ends in a giant house party where like everyone decides to come together as a community.
That's
and, like,
the one I'm used to.
Have a fucking party. Or, and then this one is the speech at the end where everyone learns a lesson, and then as a celebration we all dance.
yeah.
And this is that cliche, the apex predator of that cliche.
Yes, like
the one at the top.
Yes. Footloose does that too. Sure. Now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, they have that big scene where the parents are watching the dance from afar and they basically teach you the lesson with their dialogue. You're like, oh, they learned something from this. And then it just shows them having a party, having a great time, and that's how it ends, you know.
Yeah. So this movie, you know, it's paint by the numbers with that ending, but it's a great, I mean, I laughed hard every time Patrick Swayze peacocked out there dancing by himself. And I'm watching this with Amber, and it's like that's what I do at every wedding. She's like,
oh,
that's
really?
You. Like,
really?
you don't even fucking dance with me.
Like,
I just spin out.
On your own?
Yeah.
You leave your dance partner to just, you're like, this is about me, baby.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, the circle's formed. Time to jump in. Thank God I've been watching these YouTube videos. I've got a new move.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that was a cool ending. And Patrick Swayze sings in this as well.
Mm-hmm. She's like the wind.
The wind. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you guys, that's a huge thing. Okay. This soundtrack, amazing. This was constantly on in my house. We didn't have the cassette. We had the record, you know, and we were constantly playing. And now it's one of those albums where my parents loved it and the kids loved it too. So we were always listening to it. Sylvia. Yes, Mickey. My mom's name's Sylvia, you know? And so it was just, we loved that soundtrack.
Yeah, it had something for everybody.
For sure.
You know, they tried to make a sequel, or maybe they did, but
Havana Nights.
They offered, that's right, they offered Swayze $6 million, but he doesn't do sequels, so he said no.
Really?
Gotta love
because
Swayze.
I don't do sequels.
Yeah.
Okay. Was Vanessa Williams in that?
I don't know. I have no idea that they
because they did one, a film, but they also did a TV one.
Right.
And Vanessa Williams was involved with one of them.
Well, I think Gabe was right. It was called Dirty Dancing 2 Havana Nights.
And I think it took
place in Cuba.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. It's got a 23% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. It's probably a friendly 23%.
For people
who love the first one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you love Dirty Dancing and you can't get enough of it, go watch Havana Nights, mm-hmm. I guess. And there's a TV show, Dirty Dancing. So, but I love this film, and I loved seeing Jennifer Grey in another role that I'll remember her for. Mm-hmm. And I'm very basic. I love all the scenes that everyone else loves. So I'd give this, I think I'd give this movie 8 mashed potatoes.
Wow.
Nice. I'd give it 9 abortions. For sure. This is a solid movie, man.
Yeah. I feel like 7 rusty knives.
7 knives, yeah.
30 knives.
4 pickpockets for me. It's just not, you know, it has dancing and stuff that I really don't, I've never, this, I know why it slipped my radar as a kid. Like, it just hit every note that doesn't appeal to, like, a young boy, I feel right. like. So there was, you know, Swayze, like a not tough Swayze in dancing and singing and just constant.
Yeah, he's a professional.
Still have trouble watching those movies.
He's a pro ballet dancer.
Oh yeah, he does everything. He's like he does jujitsu, ballet. He's like a quintuple threat. Swayze is. As much as I do like him, yeah, I know why I didn't see this movie as a child.
He's a funny actor because he straddles this line between action star and sort of sensitive romantic lead.
He can play it all. You know? Versatile.
And I like all the movies where he was an action star, but I to be honest, I haven't even seen Ghost yet.
Me neither.
So.
Oh, shit, you guys. Oh, my God. This is crazy.
I know. I came here to blow your mind. So.
Damn.
That was like the reaction. I have an actor friend, Matt, who was on this show.
Yeah.
I was like, we were talking about like some movies, and I was like, yeah, just like Goodfellas. And he was like, oh, I've never seen Goodfellas. And I was like,
and we like flipped the table over. Like, are you kidding me?
He's like, why does everyone do that when I say that?
Like, oh, like we're like, I'm either going to punch you or punch the wall.
But you guys took him to a cornfield.
Yeah.
After that.
Well,
there's just those movies that hit that for, you know.
Yeah.
But seriously, that's fucking crazy. Have you not seen Goodfellas?
Hasmeen Garza, where can we find you?
Starts with an X. That's my Instagram and, you know, Facebook. Cool. When is this coming out?
In 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. I don't know where the hell I'll be then. Just follow me on Instagram. Starts with an X.
Yes. All right. And Sammy, you have anything to promote?
Not yet.
All right, everybody, this is Gabe Pacheco, and you can find me at GabePacheco.com. Also, follow the Eat, Pray, Judge Instagram, follow our Twitter, find us on Facebook, send us a message, give us 5 stars on iTunes, give us a review. We love it. The best thing you can do if you like the show is tell 2 friends to give us a listen, and we will be back with more episodes coming up soon. We love you. Bye. Tonight.